Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome, welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Amy G., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Today's date is Thursday, May 23rd, 2024, and today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in the chapter, There Is a Solution, and we are on page 21. The first paragraph that starts, but what about the real alcoholic, ending once he starts to drink, unpacking that one paragraph only. Today's readers are, and thank you everyone, Team Thursday for your service, Craig F., Tamara C., Katie G., Joni C., and the newcomer greeter, Chris W., and the host for the second awesome unrecorded hour, Nancy C. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 21,423. That's 21,423. And for the 10 a.m. meeting yesterday, 21,424. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask for Katie G. to read the 12 steps. Please go ahead, Katie.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the meeting. This is Katie G., recovered compulsive eater in Boston. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Katie G. Appreciate you as our beloved backup filling in. Appreciate you. I will now ask for Joni C. to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Joni.
Good morning. This is Joni C., gratefully recovered but not cured from Minnesota. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Joni C. Alrighty, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. If you go over, you'll hear my beeper in the background and I will say time. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only, please. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Again, this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study in the Big Book. We are in the chapter There Is a Solution on page 21, first paragraph, and I'm going to ask Craig F. to get us started. Go ahead, Craig. Can't wait.
Hi, good morning. This is Craig F., and I'm recovered, and I live in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. This paragraph is packed so much here. And it could throw us into a debate, which I don't think is the purpose. That this paragraph contains a description of the alcoholic some people will say, when we say it's that alcoholism or that compulsive overeating is permanent, progressive, and fatal, people say, well, where do you read that in the book? Because it doesn't say those exact words. But this paragraph tells us that it is progressive, that he may start out as a moderate drinker, he may become a continuous, at some stage of his drinking career, begins to lose all control. And it also tells us about the allergy, because at the end it says once he starts to drink. In other words, once he triggers the allergy. The doctor's opinion tells us that what makes us a distinct entity is that we have this allergy, that once we begin to eat certain substances, once we begin to drink alcohol in the alcoholic's case, but once we begin to eat certain substances, we lose all power to stop. That we have an allergic reaction, and that's what they're telling us here, that it's progressive, and that we have an allergy. I'm reminded of another line in the doctor's opinion that says that we believe in, it's on page XXVIII, we believe in, so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all once they have formed the habit and found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. But also what I'm reminded of when I read this is that, and probably people get tired of hearing me say this, but it reminds me of the opening line to the old OA invitation to you. It says that we've come to believe that the causes of this disease are unimportant. In other words, it doesn't matter whether we were born alcoholic or our drinking made us alcoholic, whether we were born compulsive overeaters and our became compulsive overeaters because we overate. In other words, it doesn't matter whether it's nature or nurture. It doesn't matter. The causes of this disease are unimportant. What deserves the attention of the still suffering compulsive overeater is this. There's a proven and workable method, the steps, by which this disease can be arrested. That's what deserves our attention. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Craig. Great way to get us started. Okay. We want to hear from everybody. Although, if you have shared in the last couple of days, namely Tuesday or Wednesday, we ask that you step aside so that others could share their experience, strength, and hope as well. So, who would like to share on what was read?
Kelly S.
Bonnie B., Florida.
Tony B.
Tony B.
Loretta H.
Tony B.
Reba P.
Loretta H.
Kelly.
Yes, Kelly. Reva P. Sure.
Nancy P.
I've got Nancy. I knew I missed you there. Nancy P. Okay. Anybody else? Or did I miss somebody? Here's who I got. Kelly S., Bonnie B., Tony B., Loretta H., Reva P., Nancy P. All right. Anybody else? All right. We've got a great
Patty
one
O.
here. Let's keep... Oh, Patty O. Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, we're going to get going with that lineup. Okay. Here we go, Kelly. Kelly S., you're up, followed by Bonnie B. Grab the mic, girl. Kelly, star one to unmute, please.
Sorry about that. All right, let's start over. Kelly S., recovered compulsive eater and bulimic in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My friends, Craig, stole my share. Okay, but I'll add to it. Anyway,
hate when that happens.
I know, right? I moderate drinker, problem drinker, the real compulsive eater, right? So I drank alcoholically. I did drugs like an addict. I went to AA. I went to treatment for drugs. I was in jail. I had a lot of consequences and circumstances, and I looked like an alcoholic and an addict, but I had sufficient reason. I got pregnant, so I put it down and I stopped. But with eating, it didn't matter, right? I got pregnant, didn't stop. I had kids. My kids couldn't stop me. I was over 100 pounds most of my life, right? I was 20 pounds underweight, binging and purging and put in treatment centers. I won countless diets, all those things, gained all my weight back. And by all appearances and circumstances, I look like a real compulsive eater. That's not what does it. It's not circumstances. It's not the consequences that cause me to be or define me as a real compulsive eater. It's the addiction. It's the physical allergy, and the doctor's opinion makes that clear, you know. And once I start to eat either my alcoholic foods or certain behaviors, right, it triggers that allergy, that doctor's opinion that Craig talked about, that phenomenon of craving. That's what sets me apart. It's not the weight. It's not the consequences. It's the fact that unlike everybody else, I'm a distinct entity. The doctor's opinion makes it clear. It's about the physical allergy. And what does that mean? It means that I cannot take that first bite or get in those behaviors without triggering that allergy. That is something, okay, I admitted that to you guys when I came in, but I never truly accepted it. I did not concede to my innermost self. I did still have a lurking notion because the message I heard in OA for years, not saying it was it, but what I heard was, okay, just for today, can you not have cake? Just for today, can you not have pizza? Maybe tomorrow, but just for today? No, you cannot. I cannot have cake tomorrow, not 5 years, not 10 years. I cannot have an extra handful of tomatoes. I cannot have just an extra bite of chicken, not today, not tomorrow, no lurking reservation. I had to concede to my innermost self. I had to completely admit I'm defeated. I'm without power. But guess what? The title here, there is a solution, guys. And so if you've been around forever and you feel hopeless and you're like, I'm trying. Well, guess what? First, you have to accept you really have this physical allergy. Or you have to look at, do you? I do, right? There's a solution. And what is that? It's following the instructions in the book, working these steps and getting power because I lack power. I have to get a higher power. I have to get God to help me with this inability to stop and stay stopped. And with that, I pass. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, Kelly from Oklahoma. Let's keep the fire rolling. All right, Bonnie B. Bonnie B, you are up, followed by Tony B. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, my friends. Bonnie B, living in Florida, gratefully recovered today by the grace of God. The thing that I love about this book, there's many things I love about this book, but one of the things I really appreciate is that it was brought to my attention when I first came into program that the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism, really are chapters that will reveal to myself whether or not I truly am a real alcoholic. They do that uncovering process for me, and I love the fact that it starts out with a question. But what about the real alcoholic? I mean, then the question needs to be answered by myself when I came into this program by looking at these chapters, by doing some self-diagnosis, right? I mean, did I start off as a moderate drinker? Yes. I mean, the same stories that everyone else shares. I had other substances when I was in college, and given sufficient reason, they were all placed on a back burner and pretty much died, but not the food. The food was one that came along with me at every juncture of my life. When I came into program, I came in through a program that sometimes people will say is diet with group support. It was still, it helped me. It gave me a lot of good tools, and I think maybe I was a moderate eater at that point because it seemed to work, but there was a stage where all of a sudden it didn't work. And I can't even tell you when that expiration date was. I just know that it didn't work. And that's what drove me back into this program and brought me to the question that we all have to ask, am I one of those? You know, in the big book it says we have to fully concede. And on the bottom of page 31, I think it says, you know, we don't like to pronounce any individual as an alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. I mean, it wasn't necessarily so quick because I was hoping I wasn't as extreme because it felt very extreme to me. But, you know, history proved itself out. And before I could ever fully concede and then embrace this program in its entirety, and I'm just so grateful for it at this stage in my life, I had to answer that question. Yes. Yes, I am a real alcoholic when it comes to food. Once I start, I cannot stop. And I can't stop from starting. And that's it's my history that proves that out. So this paragraph is beautiful because once again it just draws me back to that question of, you know, do I fully concede? And this is a heart thing. And if I don't, I'm going to end up going around the mountain again. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you so much, Bonnie B. from Florida. All right, Tony B., you're up, followed by Loretta H. Please go ahead, Tony.
Oh, thank you so much, Amy. Hello, family. My name's Tony B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Love the shares so far. Thank you so much for this meeting and all who do service. Oh, gosh, this is a wonderful paragraph, but what about the real compulsive overeater, the real alcoholic? I begin to lose all control of my liquor consumption once I begin to drink, eat. And also this at some stage is interesting, and it doesn't really matter, you know, when that happens in order for me to qualify, and that's quite important, I think. I believe for me it was a young age. You know, but what about this real compulsive overeater? I want to have a handful of crisps and a few crackers with butter and cheese. You know, I just want to have a few. I like the thought of eating those. That feel, that's like appealing to me. But once I begin that, these foods, I can't stop. My body requires me, actually requires me to return to the kitchen for more, to the buffet table for more. And for me, I think that was from a young age, but I didn't concede this. I thought for many years that I could, you know, manage it on my own. You know, I have no control, and I really do need to fully understand and take on board and concede to my innermost self that I am bodily different from my fellows, so that I can, you know, I can admit this total inability to control. That's my powerlessness. That's my step one. And yeah, it's vital. And if I'm powerless then to control, then, you know, this is a permanent state. It's never going to change. And, you know, this it's really important. You know, I'm a real compulsive overeater, and it's a really important distinction. Because perhaps you can eat heavily, perhaps you can eat moderately. Perhaps I used to think that I could eat heavily or moderately. But now I'm very, very clear that I cannot. And, you know, I liked what was shared. I can't have an extra bite of chicken. I can't have more tomatoes than I've got planned today. And I used to think that was crazy. That's extreme. That's, you know, but no, that's the way I am. And I'm happy about it because I've got you as my community. I've got a fellowship. I've got God in my life. And perhaps I would never have found that in this wonderful path if it weren't for the fact that I am a real compulsive overeater. And, yeah, I need a big solution. I need a big God. So thanks for letting me share, and I'll share the time.
Thank you so much, Tony B. from Scotland. Okay, Loretta H., followed by Reva P. Please go ahead, Loretta.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you all along with my precious God. You are saving my life, Loretta H., recovered in North Carolina. I looked up the word control because that is my middle name and was, and at times still is, unless I turn to the higher power, my higher power, the God of my understanding. It says the power, small p, to influence or to direct people's behavior of the course of events. The whole operation is under the control of a production manager. If that isn't my step one, nothing is. And as other people have shared, I know I am a real compulsive overeater. In fact, when I was 6 or 7, I was taken home by the hand because I had eaten all the Christmas cookies I baked in a setting with other children. And embarrassing. And yet, my control is more, and that's my allergy, in the state of anorexia. I, to this day, whenever, and I never open that door anymore, I want to starve. Whenever there's a problem, I think that would solve it because that was my control for 54 years until I came into the rooms. Today, I'm grateful. You know I'm hopeless. I know my life is unmanageable and that I, as must follow the directions in this book. You know, I have conceded ever since I was six that I have this disease. And the sad part about it is that, and it, sad or whatever, I never showed the aspects of it. But of course, and I'm also duly addicted, I've had police problems in my overeating. I've had two car crashes in my overeating and starving. So I can identify, especially with this book, more in my eating disorder than I ever could in my beverage disorder, because I never got in trouble. I was very controlled, I guess. But today I do have a program that works. I have you. I have a higher self where I can go to get more information, corrective directives. And so I'm just grateful because today I am a recovered, but I am a real alcoholic too. And so with that, I pass. Thank you all for saving my life, and have a blessed and beautiful day with God. Thank you.
Thank you, Loretta from North Carolina. We have Reva P. and then Nancy P. And Reva, before we go, just in case if you got on a little late, we are on page 21. We are on the first paragraph. Just wanted to give an update on that. All right, Reva P., you're up. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. I am so grateful for these first few chapters that helped me self-diagnose, because I can't embrace a solution if I don't really understand what my problem or diagnosis is. And for me, it was such a relief, because this whole chapter, There Is a Solution, explains to me who I'm not. I tried to be a moderate eater. I was told by well-respected professionals that I could eat everything in moderation. And I'm so grateful that I tried it, because this is not a theoretical book. I know from my experience, I tried really hard and I couldn't do it. Certain foods and ingredients just set up this crazy allergy where I had more and more, and I left all control, absolutely no control. It was like a train going at God knows how many hundreds of miles an hour. I had no power to stop that train once it started. So I'm grateful for the diagnosis and for knowing in my gut what I can and can't do and who I am. And I'm grateful for the words real alcoholic, a distinct entity. And real, actually existing. It's a thing that occurs in fact. It's a real thing. I didn't know it was a thing. I just thought I was crazy. But it's a physiological mandate for me that when certain ingredients and foods go in my body, I have a reaction. I can't tell somebody with a peanut allergy, just have a few peanuts and will yourself to not have a rash. It doesn't make sense, and that's what it's like for me. Now, if I only had the physical allergy, and we're not into this until the next couple of pages, I maybe could just stop. But why do I need the whole solution? Why do I need a higher power? Because in a few pages, I learn that my mind convinces me to go back to the substance that I'm allergic to, and I get into that vicious cycle. And if I want to heal the greater aspect of my disease in my mind and in my spirit, I need power. I cannot do it. How many times did I use that word? Now I need to be willing to embrace the solution, go to any lengths to recover. And with that, I pass.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Reva P. from Toronto. Nancy P., you're up. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. You know, this business of what about the real alcoholic? I was in this vortex of, I don't know what it was. To say that it was denial seems like talking about Katrina as like a little rain shower, you know. I didn't even know. And to me, the cruelest part of the disease, and it's part of the disease, it's not anything other than that, is what it says in Bill's story. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation, and to add insult to injury, there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope and my own hope. I mean, you know, my husband, I don't know if he was hopeful or not. He's kind of a tough read. But you know, I would have that. That's part of the cycle, you know, put it down, pick it up. And I was always surprised when I picked up again. What about, I thought, you know, and it was only when I stopped. And, you know, I used to blow through Bill's story in like 1 second with my sponsees because I didn't think it was relevant. And I even went to a meeting when I first started going to Big Book Step Study meetings. There were only AA ones, no OA ones. And there was always talk at business meetings about whether or not we should even do Bill's story because it wasn't really a step. And but then one of the tools I really think should be shut the F up and listen, Nancy P. You know, anybody else, you don't have to listen, but I have to listen. And once I listened to Bill's story, I saw that it was a thumbnail sketch of everybody's life, or certainly my life, in one degree or another. You know, lions or kitty cats, you know, tigers or house cats. And so I had everything that Bill had, and yet I still thought I could control the situation. And, you know, others were saying, what about the real alcoholic? Like, today it's true. I know who I am, and I know who I'm not. And, you know, my surrender had two stages. Again, from Bill's story, you know, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity, quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. That wasn't where I surrendered. That's where I stopped. And then later, when it said, you know, our ideas did not work, but the God idea did, I don't care about God or anything, but I wrote in the margins of the book, like, maybe this could work for me. And what I found out was, yeah, I'm a real alcoholic and nothing is going to change that. And it didn't, you know, I had to go to a pretty dark place with lost jobs and alienated friends and, you know, all kinds of those, you know, things like that. And even that, I would have been kind of happy to keep chugging along, except that my poor girl started hacking herself up and burning herself to a crisp. And that was what I needed to see. First thing I had to do was find out that I'm powerless. And I found that out when I put, you know, bacitracin on her own self-inflicted wound, sobbing over her arms. And she didn't care. I mean, she cared, but she was in her own prison. And so today I know who I am. And it's never going to change. And this disease is a shapeshifter. And I'll wrap up with this. It's a shapeshifter because it changes so that I won't recognize it. And so I'm ever vigilant. And how am I vigilant? Step 12, the spiritual awakening is only part of it. I help other people and I practice the principles unfailingly. And it starts with one word and one word only. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Just to let you all know, we're going to take some more names of folks who want to share after Patio. We're on page 21, the first paragraph. Okay, Patty, you're up. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Patio. I live in Florida. And just quickly, when I read this paragraph and heard the first person share and all the people since, it reminded me that I think I've always been a compulsive overeater. I did not recognize that for a very long time, because even as a, you know, grammar school kid, it never manifested in my life as a fat body. I did not have a weight problem. I remember early, we used to sit down to family dinners. My mother was a wonderful cook. And one of my brother-in-laws said to me, I think I was like in the sixth grade, and I was rooting around in the closet. My mother wasn't even finished doing the dishes. And he said, Patty, he cursed, but he said, you know, you haven't even been up from the supper table for 5 minutes and you're looking for more food. And I remember that distinctly, and I tucked it away in the back of my head. So I tried vigorously earnestly to be a Weight Watcher. I am not a Weight Watcher. Weight Watchers does not work for somebody like me, because always it works in the beginning. And then for me, I do the Patty modified method. You know, I start to add this or don't count that. And, you know, and soon enough, I'm paying money for something that isn't working. And then the last thing is that eventually my journey through compulsive overeating has been the end of my eating was eating, picking up after a period of abstinence, picking up, knowing exactly what I'm buying back, what's going to happen, and doing it anyway. And for me, that's the definition of my insanity. September 13th, I called somebody in Vision again, and I did not believe it was going to work, just like it hadn't worked 100 times before. But for some reason, I went through the 12 steps, and I have never felt such freedom. And all I do, try to do, not perfectly, is do what is suggested, do what my sponsor does. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy and free and realize that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Patty O from Florida. Okay, who else would like to share on what was read? Page 21.
Roz R. from Georgia. Roz.
Kim A.
Oh, Alicia D.
Kim A.
Sue Ellen C.
Alicia D. or Felicia? Alicia D.
Lisa M. from Virginia.
Alicia M.
Sue Ellen C. from Boston.
Sue.
Anita J.
Rachel K.P. I think that might be it. Okay, Anita J., Rachel K.P., I think it was. One, two, three. I think that I could try to take on one more, but I'm not sure we'll have the time. No, I don't think so. We're going to leave it there. Sorry if I missed some people, but please share on the second hour. All right, let's keep rolling. Ross R., I've got Ross R., Kim A., Alicia D., Lisa M., Sue Ellen G., Anita J., and Rachel K.P. All right, Ross, you're up. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Roz R. in Georgia. Grateful to be here today. Well, I have no doubt that I am a real alcoholic, real compulsive overeater. I had been maintaining my body weight for quite a while. And when I relocated to Georgia 4 years ago, I went into the worst relapse I ever had, because I really thought that I was doing okay. You know, I thought, as maybe some still do think, that, you know, as long as I was having a normal body weight, I was okay. And as long as my life socially was okay, and as long as I was giving some service, it was okay. But it wasn't. And honestly, I didn't think I'd ever come back. I got higher than I'd ever been. And the gift that I have been given, not only am I recovered, but I have experienced that. I had a psychic experience, not an awakening, an experience, where I was so desperate, and God came into my life like I never experienced. I used to be asked, I had been sponsored by so many people in this program to learn, how do you find God? How do you find God? Well, God found me. God found me one night when I got down on my knees and I prayed, and I woke up the next day like totally rearranged, totally a different me. And my life has never been the same. It's been the last couple of years. And I am eternally grateful, because I know that this big book talks about the real solution. And for me, this book has never really told me how to stop compulsively eating. It's always told me how to find God, and I never knew that. And now I have found God, and that is inside of me. And I am free today, and I live in the sunlight of the Spirit. And all my relationships have changed and nothing on the outside of my life has changed, but God had to move me out of Florida to get me someplace where I didn't have all the distractions in order for me to find him. And now I have, and I'm just eternally grateful for the life I've been given, for the relationships that have changed. And it's not about the outer anymore. It's about the inner, and it's about every day growing in that relationship I have with God. I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roz R. from Georgia. All right, Kim A., you're up, followed by Alicia D. Please go ahead, Kim.
Hi, this is Kim A. from New York City. So we're in the chapter, There is a Solution, and they make it very clear that the solution is in developing a relationship with a higher power. How do we do that? By working the steps. I spent 18 years, my first 18 years in OA, desperately trying to get and stay abstinent, follow a food plan, weigh and measure, avoid, you know, certain foods and ingredients, and I wasn't able to do that. And I thought it was because I was doing something wrong. The Big Book makes it really clear that there are no outside triggers. And I was looking at this as though I needed to avoid my quote-unquote triggers because that was what set me off for compulsive eating. But it wasn't. The Big Book tells us that it's our thinking that's the problem. And when we work the steps, it helps us understand with, you know, with our sponsor's help, the truth in our thinking in steps 4 and 5. That's the whole purpose of steps 4 and 5, to really see our thinking with clarity and how that thinking causes us to live in resentment and fear and, you know, self-pity and all that fun stuff, which is what leads us to food. I didn't go to food because of sugar. I didn't go to food because I didn't count my, you know, peanuts or whatever. I would go to food because I was basically a miserable bitch. And I thought it was because of things outside of myself. I thought I was miserable because of triggers. No, nothing about this is external. So if there's anybody out there who is not able to get or stay abstinent or follow a food plan, it's not necessarily because you're doing something wrong. And, you know, they say in a couple of different ways in the Big Book that if we work the steps and find the solution, right, the steps teach us power, then we can go anywhere we want. We don't have to hire a bodyguard. We can be free. We talk about, I don't know, like if you go to the ice cap in Greenland or something, I'm totally paraphrasing, you can try to avoid alcohol that way, but, you know, an Eskimo will show up with, like, you know, a fifth. And, you know, so they make it clear that no matter how you try to avoid triggers, you can't. So this book wasn't written for us. I don't have a physical allergy. I have a phenomenon of craving to the behavior of compulsive eating. So that means I take that first compulsive bite. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be broccoli, but I want to shove food in my face. That's my addiction, not to any particular food or ingredient. And that's me. I'm talking for me. But when I saw that there might be a different way to go about this, I was able to stop trying to count my peanuts and stop feeling imprisoned by a food plan. Thanks for letting me share. This is Kim A., New York City. Thanks.
Thank you, Kim. All right, we have Alicia D. followed by Lisa M. Go ahead, Alicia.
Hi, my name is Felicia D., F-E-L-I-C-I-A.
Okay.
Thank you so much for letting me share and for your service. So when I look at this, I think I probably started out as a moderate eater when I was young, but certainly even before the manifestation of the extra weight, I was getting a hit off of food. I can remember getting hits off of food in elementary school. But there was some ability to control. And then as I progressed, it got worse and worse. And in high school, I ended up about 50 pounds overweight. And then that continued on when I went into another program at a young age. The food was really the ultimate that was left, but I can have many symptoms. You know, one of the things that I'm grateful for is that I can see where sometimes my need to numb out shows up in other ways, like binging on social media or binging Netflix and eating and staying up all night and not sleeping. And, you know, it can show up in different ways. And so for me, it's not about just putting down the substance, although I have to do that to work the steps. Otherwise, if I don't work this program and I don't work the steps, it's like whack-a-mole, because there's always going to be a new way that it manifests itself, because the spiritual malady is not addressed. I'm so grateful to be here and to see the solution in the steps and with my sponsor and working them, having done my fifth step earlier this week and looking at six in a different way. I'm in Dallas this week helping my daughter and working, and have a newfound respect for people that live off of the East Coast having to get up early for this meeting. It's just such a great way to start the day, and I just couldn't live without this. And knowing, having to concede to myself that I am a compulsive overeater, that's the reason that I'm willing to get up early. It's the reason that I'm willing to stay up late to do my assignments. It's the reason that I was willing to eat food before I went to a work dinner so that I knew that I'd have the right food and wouldn't be triggered, and could go and could be free and could be happy and not focused on the food but focused on the relationships. Everything revolved around food before, and it doesn't have to today. I'm so profoundly grateful. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Felicia. I didn't get where you were from, please. So, to the contact list, people want to.
I'm from Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Okie dokie. Thank you, Felicia. All right, Lisa M., followed by Sue Ellen G. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, thanks. My name is Lisa M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater for Virginia. And for me, I've had many experiences in life that have proven time and time again that I am a real compulsive overeater. And one time in program, even abstinent, and my sister made a particular dish, a healthy dish, collard greens. I don't know if anybody on the line knows what those are, but yeah, greens. And I just asked the question, were these prepared with any kind of sugar? And she said, no, you know, you're good. And so I proceeded to eat. And immediately there was something that sparked in me that I knew for sure that there was something in there, an ingredient, sugar for me, that was not good. And I asked her, just, you know, non-threatened, you know, just in a very casual way, can I just look at the ingredients that you prepared this with? And she showed them to me in the cabinet. And sure enough, I think it was the second or third ingredient in one of the seasonings that she used, a key seasoning that she used, had sugar in it. And I was like, okay, you know, innocently enough, I proceeded to eat, and unbeknownst to me, there was an immediate trigger that went off in me that said, I want more. And it was an altering there, and I cannot explain it at all, but it was real. It was real for me. And yeah, many instances like that, sometimes, you know, unintentionally, sometimes very intentionally, got that effect from the sugar. So for me, just a plug for entire abstinence, so many years in this program, I had put down the recreational sugar, as I think we call it, and still proceeded in so many other ways to ingest the sugar to get my fix in quote-unquote healthy foods, and that did not work for me. Yeah, putting it down entirely, only by the grace of God. There is no way I could do this without God's grace and mercy in my life. And, you know, that promise, God is doing for me what I could not do for myself, comes, you know, front and center for me so often, because I just see it on a day-to-day basis. I cannot do this. I cannot, but God can. And for that, I am grateful. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Lisa M. You broke up a little bit, but I think you said you're from Virginia. Okie dokie, Sue Ellen G, followed by Anita J. I think that might be it. Rachel, I'm sorry. I'm not sure we'll get to you. Go ahead, Sue Ellen. Sue Ellen, press star 1 to unmute, please.
I'm sorry. I thought I was already unmuted. I'm Sue Ellen C from Boston. And when I read this, I think about I was always losing control. I don't remember a time that I was ever not binging. You know, as a young kid, I wasn't concerned about it because I wasn't affected weight-wise, but I was always eating compulsively, one thing after another. Yesterday, I was at work, and somebody was asking about how I eat because I always bring, you know, my afternoon food, and they just didn't know anything about it, was asking me what I do, and I was saying, kind of explaining it to them, and I said, if I eat one cookie, one whatever, that's all I can think about then. Then I'm on the hunt for more. There's nothing else I can think about or do. I'm completely unavailable, completely dysfunctional, and all I want to do is get more food, and I can't stop. I don't know till who knows when. It's just not in my power. And I fought this every step of the way. I didn't want it. I thought giving up sugar was stupid. I thought you have to be able to manage it. I mean, it took me years to accept it little by little by little, what it actually is. And what a relief. What a relief to no longer have a debate about it and to feel shame about it. I felt shame about having this disease because I thought not enough people understand. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sue Ellen G from Massachusetts. Anita J, you're up. There might be a little time left over for Rachel, but Anita, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much, Amy. This is Anita J, and I'm recovered in Massachusetts. You know that word denial? It took me so many years to stop living in denial. I came in here in 1978, chronic relapsing. I'd get it and I'd lose it. Something would trigger me. And even like in the big book, there's a sentence about, and sometimes there's absolutely no reason. And I think what I wanted to say was the time, I had just been off of, like maybe a year and a half of abstinence, picked up a substance and was off and running. And my daughter calls me and says, Mom, I'm going to get married. You've got 3 months. 3 months. Well, my God, it was with all power, whatever power I had left in me, I stopped that binge. I had already gone up to a 16. The grace of God, I didn't go any further. I didn't lose an ounce, but I didn't go any further. And the wedding pictures don't look too bad. Plus, you're supposed to look at the bride, not her mother. Well, 6 weeks later, my son, he finally did it. He said, we're getting married. We're going to get married New Year's Eve, which was about, I don't know, 2 months. I'm telling you, this time I couldn't stop. I could not stop. And so I looked very, fortunately, it was a black and white wedding, and I had on a black two-piece, 1X size outfit. Mother of the bride, and not so much the body. I look at the eyes, and you know, it's such a awful disease. Bravely at a time of such happiness, you know, that was over 25 years ago. But it was only over 10 years ago that I finally totally surrendered. So having those experiences are interesting, but they didn't do it. Not until I finally said, no, I can't go on like this anymore. Yeah. Thank God I did. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Anita J. from Massachusetts. Rachel KP, we have about a minute 20. Would you like to go ahead?
Hey, good morning. This is Rachel KP. Recovered compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania. I'll take the minute. what I want to share is that understanding the difference between the normal eater, the hard eater, and the compulsive overeater, the real compulsive overeater, is so important for the step one experience. Because if I know without a doubt that I am a real compulsive overeater, that I have a hopeless condition, that once I put these ingredients into my body, it produces this phenomenon of craving, unlike it would with the normal eater or the hard eater, and I cannot stop, despite every warning, despite, you know, anything, I'm not able to stop of my own willpower. I need a power greater than myself, right? So if I admit that I'm a real compulsive overeater, that I have this problem, then I need this solution. And the doctor's opinion says the only relief we have to offer is entire abstinence. So if I know that I'm a real compulsive overeater, I need to do whatever it takes to make sure that I do not put my alcoholic foods into my body. No matter what restaurant I go to, what party I go to, where I go, I can't do it. So I just wanted to communicate that. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Glad we had time for you. Okay. Thank you, everyone who shared. Thank you to Team Thursday for your service. Please join us as we continue on for a second unrecorded, an awesome unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. The share ID for today, Thursday, May 23rd, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,427. That's 21427. That is the reference ID. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Tamara C., please go ahead and read a vision for you.
Thanks, Amy. Good morning, everyone. This is Tamara C., grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater and live in Missouri. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. And